From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 24th day of August 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's a senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And then later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, the U.S. government wants to make it mandatory to report all sugar imports from Mexico. Brazil is taking U.S. trade barriers to task at the WTO again, and the CME Group has a brand new plan to fix convergence in its wheat contracts. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories later in the half hour, and then I'll tell you about some research in a food lab here on campus that could lead to more efficient ethanol plants. Hey, don't forget, in just 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
In Chicago, on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby May wheat at $4.71¾, up 11½ for the afternoon. December at $4.99¼, 12 higher. And the March contract at $5.18¾. And the soft red, 12 cents higher. Hard red in Kansas City finished 9½ cents higher at $5.03¼. September corn futures, $3.29½, up 7¾. December at $3.35½, 9¼ higher. And the March contract at $3.49¼, up 9¾. May futures from the corn pit, $3.58½, up 9½. July at $3.67¼, 9 cents higher. September soybean futures, $10.80. Settlement price, 57 higher. November at $10.07½, up 34½. And January futures, $10.09½, 33¾ higher. March contract in the bean pit, $10.07, up 32¼. The May at $10.15½, up 31½. Soybean meal now, September futures from the products, $3.46.20, up $13.20. October bean meal at $308, up $10, that is. And September bean oil, $37.11, 78 cents higher. August live cattle futures, 17½ higher at 85.17½. The aug feeders at $100.10, down a nickel. And October lean hogs, $1.25 lower at 46.82½. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like. On the afternoon, settlement prices from the crude oil pit, $74.37 a barrel in the October contract, 48 cents higher. September ethanol at $1.64, up 2¼. Natural gas at $2.92¼, 12¼ higher. RBOB gasoline at $2.05, that's up 5½ cents. And September heating oil, diesel fuel, $1.92¾, 1¼ higher. Propane futures at 94¾ cents, just about unchanged. And the gold futures at 942.30. That's down $10.90. And the Dow now at 95.15. That's now 9,515. Just about 9 points higher. The U.S. dollar at 78.27 is 0.23 higher. And the CRB index on the afternoon at 261.21. is up 1.98 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own staff meteorologist, Ed Keezer. He says tonight should be mostly clear. Lows will range from 52 in northeastern Indiana to 64 in downtown Chicago. And tomorrow, mostly sunny skies. Highs will range from 83 in northwestern Illinois to 87 in some central and southern locations. The extended forecast calls for scattered showers that could develop in northern Illinois on Wednesday, but most areas, Ed says, will remain dry. Scattered showers and thunderstorms are likely on Thursday and Friday. Initially, most of the showers will be across northern and western Illinois, with just isolated showers elsewhere. Over time, the showers, he says, will become a bit more numerous further south and east. There are signs also, says Ed, that some scattered showers and thunderstorms will still be possible this coming weekend, especially across Indiana and southern Illinois. Dry weather expected early next week to close out the month of August. More on the weather when we get to the bottom of the hour right here on WILL.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Monday afternoon. On the line with us to take a look at what happened in the world of agricultural commodities today in Chicago and elsewhere is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It was a busy day in Chicago, especially in the bean pit. What happened there?
Wow, what excitement there. We took a run to the upside Friday, followed through overnight, and today, technically, we had a technical outbreak to the upside. Outside market help with crude up, Dow up, metals up early in the session, and world vegetable oil is higher. You know, concern that the Indian monsoons just aren't there. So vegetable, palm oil, strong. Also, too, concerns about a few dry pockets in China. We're picking up. It's probably not widespread as some of the reports are indicating, but that is a little bit concerned when you've got a crop coming on. You want to be the best you can. When you got these little pockets, it's a little concern. But the main thing from China, though, not only the weather, but the huge buying spree they were on. Last week they purchased well over 860,000 metric tons of beans, and the idea is they bought some more over the weekend, but we didn't see any confirmation here this morning, so all eyes will be on the reporting system tomorrow, see if there is a sale reported. If so, it could help, you know, support the beans here, but failure to see a report of additional sales might signal that they've bought what they need so far. But domestic, quite a bit of concern starting to show up, visiting with producers clear across the Midwest. We're hearing concerns about sudden death and white mold and so forth. And that is a concern because when you take just one or two bushels off the supply-demand balance sheet, that tightens up the tight stocks we have already. So we'll have to continue to monitor the production numbers as we go here, according to see if these other factors kick in or not. Then another item was the weekend. Anybody that was out over the weekend that experienced the cool weather, more cool weather in the forecast here as we go into next week. So that continues the slow development in the crop. And lastly, Todd, probably the most explosive thing we heard this morning was that one of the major news carrier had an analyst projecting $20 beans.
I missed that one.
Oh, man, we didn't. It was one call after another, and whoever saw that got quite excited, and I never did hear the details other than $20 beans.
Well, I don't know who might have been predicting $20 beans. I don't suppose you're on that list at this point for the short list for $20 beans, are you?
Well, if we have a frost freeze prior to Labor Day, we will. But other than that, that's pretty optimistic. But they didn't say when, though, Todd.
No, well, yeah, that tends to be the case. All right, so let's throw that one out. You think I can't imagine that there were many in Chicago that paid too much attention to it, but I bet it got your customers base in an uproar for just a bit. So let's get back to the basics of what we really have out here. And maybe I'd like to turn to the corn. Tell me about the marketplace for corn. Can we use the crop if it's a big one, if it's over 13? Can we use it? What kind of ending year stocks might we have next year? And does this all mean that USDA's projection for cash prices is just about right in the low $3?
Well, knowing what we know now and no sudden into the growing season, and there's really no major quality concerns, you know, if we put that to the side and assume we're going to make it to the end okay, starting with ethanol, I was suspicious of a 4.2 billion bushel usage. You know, we're talking 550 more million bushel from a year ago. But ethanol is back to break-even, profitable. New plants have come online, and they're going to give it a go here. So I agree with the upage in the ethanol category. The other side is the export side. This past year, we factored in 1.85 billion bushel exports. That's the lowest we've seen over the last 5 years. And so, therefore, 2.1 is a generous increase, and it could probably be a little higher than that. So I think exports will go up. I think we've seen the worst of corn exports. Then the great unknown is feed usage. Even though livestock numbers are down, if you look at the weights we're looking at, producers are feeding longer and heavier weights. So feed usage could probably hang in there unchanged, maybe slightly higher. So the feed usage, exports, ethanol, food and seed usage, it's all going to be up from last year. So I think we're going to use a good chunk of this year's coming crop. We've got 1.7 left over from last year. You throw that in there, we're probably going to be about where we were in the last couple of years. 1.6, 1.7 last year, we're probably 1.5 to 1.7, 1.8 this coming crop year. But that's been the function of the market here as we move lower to seek out demand, and hopefully that demand will come forward to gobble up the crop we'll have coming at us here in the next month or two.
Anything producers should be thinking about on the cash side of the marketplace, given that they're probably covered by crop insurance at these levels, maybe have acre in place for revenue assurance as well. Do they do anything, or do they wait it out and see what happens with the price of corn as we move through harvest first and then into the winter months?
On the conservative side, most will probably wait and see what happens and see if we can't see some recovery. I know a lot of them are rooting prices lower here over the short term, but we're looking at the larger picture, I guess, and we feel we're doing like we've done in the past history here, recording some type of low here prior to harvest or shortly in the first part of harvest here. And I think you defend the market here at these lower levels. What I mean by that is to use the weakness to be a buyer to replace sales or buy some calls in to try to hedge maybe some of these farm program payments, for say. So each one's a little different, and there's a lot of creative ideas out there on what to do. It just depends on your comfort zone and how far you're sold up. One thing is that these price levels with a crop that's got good quality, we feel majority of it's going to be stored. So therefore, we're going to have to see basis improve as we go into December to shake some of this grain loose. So for ones that's wanting to store and hang on, we feel the best cash grain market opportunity will be the first, second week of December there, Todd.
And then very quickly on the flip side of that, soybeans moving into the $10 range again. So what do we do there?
Failure to see an early frost, failure to see widespread damage from mold or rust or sudden death would suggest that these beans are overvalued, especially if we see a huge South American crop come at us. So one can move the cash beans and replace ownership on paper. Well, the conservative thing to do, which we've been promoting since clear back a year ago, would be to buy a put option to put a floor into you. That way, if the thing rolls over, you got coverage. If not, you still have the beans to sell.
And finally, tomorrow night, you and Dave Dickey and Jackie Vakes and who else? Bill Mayer will be up at the El Paso Golf Course, the club there in El Paso, Illinois, for another one of our Outlook meetings sponsored by Illinois Public Media, Heartland Bank and Trust of El Paso, and Illinois Grainland Co-op in El Paso is the sponsors of that one. I hope you have a good trip and looking forward to seeing a whole bunch of folks there, aren't you?
Oh, boy, that's the most exciting part of the job, being able to go out and do these meetings. Got some good sponsors. I'm sure we'll have a good crowd there. It's amazing the questions that come up at these meetings, but the main thing is everyone's opportunity to sort of pick everyone's brain, and like I mentioned, they're always educational and entertaining, too.
All right. Thanks much, and we appreciate you being with us for the day.
Very good.
That is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. You can see him tomorrow night on one of our Ag Outlook panels up at the El Paso Golf Club. You heard about that, but tonight you can visit one of those panels in Shelbyville at the Lions Club at 6 o'clock with dinner to follow. Matt Bennett is there from Grain market, total grain marketing out of Windsor. Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities will be on hand. Bill Mayer will be there as well. He's with Strategic Farm Marketing. That one's sponsored by Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, but you can go there at the Shelbyville Lions Club tonight at 6 o'clock.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
Dave Dickey's here now with the Ag News for the day.
In agricultural news, the U.S. is calling for mandatory reporting of Mexico sugar imports. Since January of 2008, when Mexico, under the North American Free Trade Agreement, gained the right to export unlimited sugar to the U.S., USDA officials have lowballed estimates of Mexican imports early in the year and then had to raise them. Other factors also make estimating Mexican sugar imports difficult. Last year, the devaluation of the Mexican peso and the Mexican mills' need to sell sugar in order to raise cash during the financial crisis led Mexico to export an unexpected amount of sugar to the U.S. Currently, Mexican reporting of sugar going to the U.S. is voluntary. Brazil appears ready to file another complaint at the World Trade Organization against U.S. trade practices. Brazil will be going after the process the U.S. uses to determine the level of tariffs levied against imports of frozen concentrated orange juice. At issue is the U.S. practice of zeroing, which critics say the U.S. improperly uses to inflate the size of the tariff it imposes on imports. Japan recently won a major WTO case against the U.S. involving zeroing, and trade observers have no reason to believe that a new WTO panel would not issue an identical ruling in a zeroing case involving Brazilian orange juice. CME Group plans to propose a dynamic storage rate for the Chicago Board of Trade wheat futures contract if the market continues to struggle to converge with cash prices. Exchange officials intend to distribute the variable storage rate concept broadly to the industry for additional input, probably within the next 2 weeks. Under the concept, storage rates could increase or decrease from month to month, depending on spreads between the nearby contract and the first deferred contract month. Specifics of the proposal, including the increase and or decrease increment and trigger points for adjusting rates, are still being discussed. And the Government Accountability Office is wrapping up a study on biofuels to give to Senator Barbara Boxer, a Democrat from California, as she prepares to work on climate change legislation in the Senate this fall. A spokesperson for the GAO says that Boxer will receive a report entitled Biofuels, Potential Effects and Challenges of Required Increases in Production and Usage tomorrow. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Urge you to visit our website, of course. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Now, up next, you know, research right here on this campus may lead to more efficient ethanol plants. a food scientist at the university, thinks it's possible. I'll have a report on a plan to turn byproducts from the ethanol plants into actual fuel. One of the byproducts of a corn ethanol plant is distillers' dried grains with solubles, or DDGs. Generally, it's fed to livestock, although there have been efforts to make it into fuel, too. They've been costly and therefore not particularly successful. A food scientist at the University of Illinois wondered about this process by which the conversion to fuel takes place. Part of it's called a pretreatment and uses some harsh chemicals to break down the tough corn fiber in the DDGs. Hal Fang thinks there might be a better way, one already used in University of Illinois labs to kill E. coli and other bugs on fresh fruits and vegetables. And the main ingredient is water, not chemicals.
Now we have this water, but this water has two extreme pH, very low pH, very high pH. Why not using this water to do the pretreatment?
Using electrolyzed water that creates the two portions rather than harsh chemicals could be a more effective and environmentally friendly method in the pretreatment of ethanol waste products to produce an acetone-butanol-ethanol fuel mix. Here's how it works. For any biofuel production, you need to have simple sugars, in this case the glucose. Well, the glucose and DDGs is stuck together, forming cellulosic corn fiber. But the structure is very tough. So in order to get the glucose out, you must destroy the structure. And normally people use a strong acid, sulfuric acid, or a strong lime base to loosen it, making holes in it. Once the structure is destroyed, it can be processed into ethanol. But destroying the structure with chemicals creates some unwanted effects. If you electrolyze water, however, it's a different story. Feng's lab has a machine with two electrodes. When you pass current through the water, it divides into acidic and alkaline portions. Pre-treat the DDGs in this electrolyzed water, and it breaks down the tough corn fiber. Pretty quickly, too. It works in the lab, and the DDGs can be turned into ethanol. The next step is to ramp up the process to pilot plant size and to see if it still works, and if it's economical. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Monday afternoon, time to check the cash grain market. The folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County are on the line with us. Good afternoon to Brian Stark. Good afternoon, Brian.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, very quickly, did the stimulus package in Chicago for the beans stimulate any sales in Champaign County and the surrounding areas?
Not yet, surprisingly, because I think there's two key words the trade is going to impact yield here over the next 6 weeks. One is the maturity in corn, and two, disease pressure you're starting to see in soybeans. And I think that's primarily the driver in beans, along with pro farmers' yield estimate being a little bit lower in the USDA. And then you couple that with a strong outside market, have beans leading the charge and pulling a reluctant follower in corn right behind it.
And what do you think will cause producers to sell? Will they have to empty out corn bins yet? Or
I don't think so at this point. You know, we've heard some talk of potentially carrying some corn that maybe has quality issues over and maybe potentially blending with new crop. But right now, they're still very reluctant sellers, surprisingly enough, on the old crop side.
Well, you have not been able to entice them. So what are your bids for the day nonetheless?
337 cash corn, fall corn 317, cash soybeans 1077, and fall 992.
All right. Thanks much, Brian.
Thanks, Todd.
Hey, Brian Stark is with the Andersons. Somebody from that Champaign County office joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Monday afternoons. In 2 minutes, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast with the folks from Chesapeake Energy.
It's National Peach Pie Day. It's also St. Bartholomew's Day, patron of cheese merchants and butchers. On this day in agricultural history in 1842, Benjamin Wright died. An American engineer, he directed the construction of the Erie Canal. Wright made the project a school of engineering project. And until the mid-1800s, almost every civil engineer in the U.S. had either directly trained with or trained under someone who had worked with Wright on the canal. In 1869, Cornelius Swarthout received the first U.S. patent for a waffle iron. In 1894, Rudolf Geiger was born, a German meteorologist. He was one of the founders of microclimatology, the study of climate conditions within a few feet of the soil. His observations made above grassy fields and areas of crops shed light on the complex interactions between vegetation, heat, radiation, and water balances of the air and soil. In 1909, workers poured the first concrete for the Panama Canal. Finishing all the locks took nearly 4 years. In 1918, Roy McIntyre was born, a chemical engineer who worked for Dow Chemical Company. He invented styrofoam. And in 1997, Lewis Essen died, an English physicist. He invented the first practical atomic clock. His cesium beam atomic clock ultimately changed the way time is measured. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Monday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. On the line with us this afternoon, the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather. It was just a really beautiful weekend if you were a human being and you wanted to be outside. But I suppose for the growing corn and soybean crops, a few clouds and the temperatures very low were not the thing that they really wanted at this time of year. How much cooler than normal was our weekend?
Well, temperatures on average were about 10 to even some areas 15 degrees below normal. That was especially true in the northern sections of the Corn Belt. A lot of that had to do with Canadian high pressure settling down over the area, winds coming off the Great Lakes, and keeping temperatures unseasonably cool. But obviously today we've seen that air mass push off to the east, temperatures warming up. And it looks like for the rest of the week, at least between now and Friday, temperatures will be close to average for this time of year, with a little bit more of a warm-up the next couple of days, but then slight cool-down. Actually, what we're watching beyond the next 5 days is another unseasonably cool air mass coming down into the Corn Belt about a week from now. Next Sunday and Monday look to be the coldest mornings. We don't see any kind of threatening temperatures, at least from, you know, a freezing standpoint. But potentially some areas of the far northern belt could have temperatures in around 40 degrees at that time.
Well, that seems awful cold for the month of September. I would think, does it give you pause to look out further and watch the jet stream to see whether it's moving faster this season than it has in previous years to bring in cold air over the long term?
Well, certainly the pattern over the past 3 to 4 months has been pretty resilient, and this troughing of low pressure across the eastern U.S. Continues to periodically funnel, you know, these Canadian air masses down into the central and eastern portions of the country. But at least if you're going to get any kind of, you know, unusually early freeze, it's usually not one air mass that does it, but it's usually air mass number 2 or air mass number 3. So that's the item to watch here. As we move into September, you get into a long duration pattern that features a parade of air masses coming down. If that looks to be the case here, then that could potentially increase the odds here of getting an early freeze at some point here during, you know, the middle to even end of September.
And what tip-offs might there be that would be the case? How will you know?
Well, the item to watch here is really the pooling of cold air up across areas of Canada, especially western and central areas. This air mass that's going to be coming down into the Corn Belt about a week from now, it's actually going to be plunging southward to the central areas. And overall, that's not the best of setups here if you want temperatures to turn unseasonably cold. You would actually like your air to kind of pool a little bit more, or what we call a radiate more across areas of western Canada first, and then that in turn moves down into the Corn Belt. So at least over the next couple of weeks we don't see that, but that is certainly the item to watch come September.
Anything else to add on the weather across the globe very quickly, maybe on China?
Yeah, China's PRISA prospects have decreased for this week, and we had last week's rain event that helped stabilize the increasing dryness stretch, but looks like they're going to have some lower yields compared to very good levels starting out the growing season.
Thanks much.
My pleasure, Todd.
Mm-hmm. That's the folks from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. More on the Closing Mark Report when we turn again tomorrow, the same station and at this same time. I'm Todd Gleason.